Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
That podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear those co-hosts shouting, it's Dana and Jay.
All right, welcome into the growler edition of Hear That Podcast Growling. Paul Ener Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are here with you as we go full steam into the boo. Battle of Ohio week is here. The excitement and the energy in town is just, you can feel it, you know? You can just feel the excitement of this game this week, can't you, Jay?
You can, it's going to double. 12,000 this week. They only had 6,000 for the last home game.
That's true. It's going to be loud and proud, I guess, down at Paul Brown Stadium, or double the booze for the boo. Only fitting there can be more booze at the boo.
I guess you're one way or the other. You're going to see that because whoever loses this game is in a world of hurt. And I imagine we're going to see quite a few Browns fans, as you typically do, at a boo game.
Yeah. So we've got a little bit to get to here. The big thing here is going to be Zach Jackson is going to join us to talk about Cleveland and where they're at. A really good conversation back and forth with him, not just about the Browns, but some of the where the Bengals are at. And I think you'll really enjoy that. So looking forward to Zach coming up here later. I'm going to talk a little bit about my least favorite term in all of sports, I think. I don't know. I'd have to really have... Send me your least favorite term on Twitter at Paul Dano Jr. if you have one. But I think mine might be must win. Like I really despise it. But it's in the conversation this week. And I would say as close to rightfully so as possible. I want to tie a bow on the conversation we had on Tuesday about Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins with a little bit more light to shed on that. We have the Bengals growler bet for you, of course, and I have to shout out Bill Douglas. I don't know how this happened. Apologies to Bill, who emailed me as a longtime listener and first-time growler participant, as many of you seem to be. There's so many of you, I can't stop from giving away free beer anymore.
Need to hire an intern.
I know. I need to hire Optimistic Bobby. Just to get all these beer deliveries going. Bill Douglas, shout out, hit the 78.3 passer rating from Joe Burrow. So we had a 78.2, a 78.3, and a 78.4 last week. So Bill hits it. So the growler bets, people, it's getting harder. Apparently I got to make it harder on you. So wait till you hear this one. Jay and I will have our game predictions too. All that coming your way. I want to start here, and it's with that dreaded must-win term that I despise. But look, Tennessee and Pittsburgh are next. They're 5-0. They're playing each other. Pittsburgh is just destroying everything in its path. Derrick Henry is, you know, destroying everything in his path. Those don't really look like winnable games. Those look like, let's hope that Joe Burrow is still healthy after these two games. The idea of losing to the Browns, going 0-5 in this critical stretch, which would include getting embarrassed in Baltimore and blowing a 21-point lead, and then getting swept by the Browns for the season, is a demoralizing stretch that makes you wonder who all will survive it. And obviously most of the talk right now is everyone screaming and yelling about fire Zach Taylor and fire the coach. And everybody wants the coach fired after every loss. And certainly we're at that point and the numbers speak for themselves there. But I wonder, you know, you wonder if there would be a mid-season fall guy, if you hit this stretch and it doesn't go well. I think it's an interesting question. worth discussing right now and perhaps what's on the line for this game. This could buy you what you need to get to that second half of the season where you have a little bit more hope to string some wins.
I mean, who would that fall guy be at midseason?
It'd have to be Lou, right?
That's what I was thinking. And you do have a linebackers coach in Al Golden who has defensive coordinator and head coaching experience, but I don't know. You wonder, obviously, Zach handpicked all these guys that are here that weren't carryovers. There's only a few carryovers. And Lou was the last one he hired. We talked about, you know, that it was right before the combine, before they finally got a defensive coordinator. I don't know if making a change at midseason, I guess if they give up, you know, just tons of points in these next three games or next two games, because that's where it would happen, would be at the bye. That would be a possibility, but it feels like no matter how bad it gets, that nothing's going to happen till the end of the season. That they're going to look over the body of work of two full seasons. It's not like changing Lou at midseason is going to spark some wild second half rally, although the schedule does get easier. But it just feels to me like, you know, Zach picked these guys. He's all about accountability. And it would almost look like he was making a scapegoat when whatever, if it's Lou or whoever it is, there's so many other issues that you can't just pinpoint one guy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Zach Taylor would want to fire Lou Anarumo. I think when you lose enough games, the pressure comes down of you have to do something. And especially when you have what's happening with Carlos and Gino on one side of the ball, we know how the organization feels about them to the point that they gave them all the money that they did, and to see them disenchanted and everything else. Is there somebody that can come in and reconnect that relationship, or are they putting the toxicity there on Lou? You know, where is that lying? I don't know. I do think it would be the wrong move. I the Bengals are 18th in DVOA now. They were, I believe, 14th last week on defensive side of the ball. They've had some good games. The defense has kept them in some games. The defense should have credits for some wins under their belt. They don't, because the offense blew it or turned it over or got Joe Burrow killed or whatever. We have seen midseason firings before, very recently. And in fact, they had gone 50 years without them, and then they went back-to-back years with Ken Zampezi and Terrell Austin the last couple years of Marv. So we have seen this happen recently around here. What's happening with the Bengals defense right now is not what was happening with Terrell Austin and is not what was happening in that first couple of games with Ken Zampezi. That was the Bengals offense. There was a near mutiny in the locker room. Now, people can talk about what's happening here, but I don't think that's what the case is here. When Ken Zampezi was rolled out, and that was a year plus and they went the first two games with no touchdowns, and it was ugly. Terrell Austin was on pace to have the worst defense in the history of football. I mean, it was truly atrocious. They had a bye week, and Marv takes the wheel. I don't think that's the right move. If you want to, you know, what we're seeing, and credit Elise Jesse, who used to work at Channel 5 and is currently a stay-at-home mom in Connecticut, still breaking stories, as credible as she gets, she's very, very, very well connected, has that, you know, Al Golden is involved in this third down play calling, you know, setting the rushes, all that stuff. That's not totally rare. Paul Gunther did that type of thing for Mike Zimmer, and that was a big part of his role and his emergence as Mike Zimmer's kind of right-hand guy here. That's something we've seen here. It happens across the league. Now, what exactly that is, we don't know the extent of exactly what that is that's going on, but, you can see that part in place. Is it giving other people bigger roles, whatever? I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. I don't think it would be a Lou Anarumo takes the midseason fall. I don't think it ends there. Even if they're 1-7-1, there will be probably a lot of pressure too. Now, end of the season, there's got to be fall guys if your season goes as poorly as it could go at that point. But I don't see a midseason thing happening.
Yeah, I don't either, just for the reasons you said. If it does, yeah, it feels like Lou would be the guy. But it was the Ken Zampezi one was 2 weeks into the season. They let him go. And you talked about that when Marvin made the switch and took over. I believe that was fairly late. I think it was right.
It was a middle of the year bye, and then they played one more game after the bye because everyone was like, "Well, why didn't you just do it at the bye?"
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, they didn't. They gave him one more chance. I think because the schedule got a little easier after that. They had the Saints, I believe, right after the bye, if I remember correctly, ran up like maybe a 50 burger on them.
Yeah, it was like what, three straight 500 yard games, yeah. And that the third one was the final straw for Marvin.
We don't want your first game as a DC to be against the Saints.
No.
No, go to Lamar Jackson's debut, which also didn't go well. That was when he couldn't get the headset to work right. Remember?
he kept pushing the wrong button. And then
That was the best part. He said, I think it was Sam Green did that trip for us, the Inquirer, had that great picture of Marv looking down, not knowing how the buttons worked.
And then they go to LA and it quits working altogether.
Yes, right. Okay, so there's that. So the other part of the Lou conversation is what's happened with Gino and Carlos. And I just want to dip back into this one last time and quickly. I'm not trying to, you know, go any further. The response I've heard most to the column I wrote and the podcast we had on Tuesday, if you haven't heard that, go back and listen to it. It's a delightful first 15 minutes. Is that, okay, yes, Carlos, yes. But Gino, no. I don't buy that. He's hurt. And that's what's going on there. Obviously Carlos more so than Gino is at the tip of the spear here. I mean, because he's the one being publicly vocal. He's the one doing the Instagram live look at me. He's the one that has been so far into a pretty toxic relationship. Gino's relationship isn't something to, you know, put up on a pedestal at this point anyway. We mentioned the captain thing last week. And it gets murky, right, when you start talking about injury and desire to play and things like that. And we went through this last year, whether we're talking about Cordy Glenn, whether we were talking about AJ Green. And it's just this type of thing. It just can, when it continually goes on, at what point do we, you know, do we start calling a spade? You know what I mean? And is that Gino's fault that he ends up in this bucket that's already got people in it? Probably not. And maybe it really is a matter of being hurt and all that. That doesn't change the situation where it's still part of that contingent that is unhappy, that is expressing frustration, that is doing all that, that is part of that group, the Marvin vets that we keep talking about, that faction, which is still why I say it's still time to move on for that fact, and the production is not there. Now, that's just me. Obviously, the full-on drama portion of this is on Carlos, but it does. I don't think it changes the fact that you're still not getting much from Geno Atkins. If anything, he's a shell of himself, of what he was for certain. That's been trending for a while now. And if you're having trouble with that whole group, and there's complaining and all of that stuff going on, and pointing the fingers, the toxicity that we talk about, he's in that. Whether he says words or what he says or not, he's in that.
And
in my opinion,
he is in it. The curious thing is, you know, Carlos kind of earned this by not playing well and by not playing hard. They had film. They had two, three games on it. He basically was benched in the first Cleveland game. You know, that's not the case. Gino's role hasn't been reduced because he hasn't played well. I mean, they brought him off the injury and put him in this limited role. The question is that the plan for the rest of the year, or is this a sort of easing in where the shoulder maybe isn't 100%? I mean, I guess this week will tell a lot because it's been 2 weeks now, and it's been what, 18 and 19 snaps that he's played. You can't tell me that he's not, even though he's a shell of his former self, you can't tell me he's not better than some of these other guys that they have out there on first and second down. How much of this is the shoulder and how much of this is just kind of like punitive for being discontented, or I don't even know if that's a word, for being upset, for not being a leader in the locker room. What do you think? Do you think we see more of Geno this week, or do you think this trend just continues and he's just a third down guy and that's what he is?
I don't know. I mean, I think we'll see. You should see more of him. I assumed you'd see more of him last week.
Yeah,
it's like if you were good enough to play 18 snaps, and your team desperately needs somebody on the inside to go play, and you should want to play more snaps. And if it's the coaching staff telling him not to, that's a whole different conversation. You know, but I don't get that impression. So I thought he would last week. So should I expect it this week? I don't know. I just wanted to kind of just tie a bow around that, because we've heard there's just a lot of the reaction to the column was about why is Geno lumped in there too, and it's different because he's quiet about it. But if you're doing the same things under the surface, if you're still part of that contingent under the surface, that is part of it. Let's go to Zach Jackson. Bengals, Browns, big game on Sunday. Certainly desperation game on Sunday. Insight from both sides, talking about where things are at. I think you will enjoy this. Definitely a good look at what's going to go down at Paul Brown Stadium. So here is Zach Jackson. Let's take a quick break here for one of our sponsors. All right, now we're going to move on and check back in Cleveland, and that means finding our good friend from Civilized Barking, Zach Jackson. Zach, how's it going?
What a pleasure to be with you guys.
I mean, isn't it?
And what a pleasure for football fans. The third time in seven games the Browns play the Bengals.
Yeah. You know, it really it's a rivalry that runs so deep, and it brings out such quality and such high stakes. But actually, you know, I'm actually curious. Last time we talked, before Joe Burrow threw 61 passes remarkably in Cleveland, and was decapitated on the one by Myles Garrett. Last time we talked about Baker Mayfield, shockingly, and sort of like a crossroads season, and you know where is it going to go? And you've kind of written more about that now, about the true wondering if Baker Mayfield is the guy up there. What has maybe changed over this last month to shed more light on that question?
He hasn't played the Bengals since week two. a quarter of his wins are against the Bengals. Best numbers are against the Bengals. I mean, look, it's not like this is a completely overmatched, overwhelmed guy, right? The Browns have had that, right? Like John Manziel rolled out of bed and rolled out to the field, you know? Cody Kessler had no chance. DeShone Kizer had no business being out there. But I just think that the guy we're seeing now is the guy we saw for most of last year. It's the guy I saw in training camp. And he hasn't been good enough. And, you know, what's different than all those guys and you know, previous additions? This offense is built to win. The defense, you can argue, right? There's no arguing that it's been malpractice with the Browns changing everything on him and not, you know, supporting him in that way. Four head coaches in 3 years and all of that stuff. That's just outrageous. But, you know, his calling card was accuracy, and he's missing the simple ones. And, you know, quite frankly, some of them are getting completed and he has thrown touchdowns and all of that. But every time he drops back, it's its own adventure. And until you get that consistency, and unless you can hit the easy ones, you're not ever going to be the guy to get your team to where you really want to go. Statistically, he's trended towards Andy Dalton and Jameis Winston. You know, guys that were fine, but not good enough. And I see a, more than a pattern, guys, of a player that it is not headed towards that level that will ultimately get the Browns where they really want to go. So, you know, that all that said, they're probably headed for the playoffs, right? The scheduling gods and the offensive firepower that they do have. I think Kevin Stefanski has done a great job in most areas, all things considered. And the roster is better than almost any time it's been in the 22 seasons that the Browns have been back. But I don't think Baker Mayfield's the guy, and I think there's enough proof to prove me right.
You you said you think they're heading toward the playoffs. Did you drop the stat that I sent you on your listeners and readers?
Not yet. not yet, but that was pretty astounding, you know. Think about 2002 being the last time that they were in the playoffs. I mean, how different was the world? Right?
How different? Zach, I think you and I were at OU together, weren't we?
I was there. They led the Steelers by 17 points in Heinz Field. It was the second year that Heinz Field was open. They did not win the game. The next year they won in Heinz Field. And not only is that their only win in Heinz Field, but them winning that game allowed the Steelers to get Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, lots changed since then. I mean, you know, Rufus the Bobcat hadn't even thought about punching Brutus in the eye yet.
Yes,
I mean, he hadn't even considered it.
Yes, he was assaulting, you know, his fellow elementary school students, not his fellow mascots.
Oh man, I could. I think we should really just talk at length about that story. Just every time we have you on, it's definitely more entertaining than talking about the X's and O's of Bengals Browns. Why should we believe that the Bengals would be able to beat the Browns on Sunday?
Well, I mean, you know, the Browns thoroughly dominated the first game, right? They didn't put it away. It came down to an onside kick, even though the Browns were kind of in charge, and you know. That was week two, so everything's new and nothing was really figured out, right? The other two reasons I would say the Bengals are really good on special teams. The Browns have been not. And, you know, not that he wasn't a factor, but it was a quiet night for Joe Mixon. So, you know, throwing 61 passes is not ideal, specifically for a rookie on a short week in his second NFL game, right? So I just think this week the Bengals get – well, the first time they get a stop, it'll be the first time they get a stop against the Browns. But if they can get a couple and get Mixon going, then this game is going to the fourth quarter.
The Bengals defense has been better. They did blow a 21-point lead in Indianapolis on Sunday, but they had a 21-point lead in Indianapolis. Yeah. And that was part of it, too. I mean, the defense really has had their moments. And Joe Burrow has certainly had his moments. It's a matter of whether they can put it together. You know, the big thing that stood out to me in Cleveland that I'm curious about the second time around, especially, you know, without Nick Chubb, I mean, how different is the Browns running game? Because that was really the difference. I mean, when they lined it up in that with five and change left and the Bengals had pulled within a score and the Bengals needed to stop and the Browns just shoved it down their throat, everyone in the building knowing they're running it and the Bengals couldn't stop it. And that's back when they had DJ Reader and Sam Hubbard up front, and now they don't. I just wonder how if the Browns' running game is still the same machine that it was then, because to me that is what spells problems for the Bengals.
Yeah, I agree with you, Paul, on that assessment, and I would say it's still a good running game, but it's not a phenomenal running game without Nick Chubb. I mean, Nick Chubb is flat out one of the best players in the league, not running backs, you know, not unsung heroes. The guy is phenomenal. He is low maintenance, high production, hard to tackle, turns 2 yarders into four and four into 8 or 10 or 80, right? So they're also missing their right guard, Wyatt Teller, who hurt a lot of Bengals' feelings in that game, and the line was not the same. So the Bengals aren't coming out with the Steelers' front seven and just pushing the Browns back as what happened last week. But between missing that key component in the trenches and your best running back – It is not the same. Dearness Johnson is a power runner who could be almost any team's, you know, number two or three running back, and is knows how to get tough yards, requires multiple guys to tackle him. And Kareem Hunt is a former NFL rushing champion and is dynamic and catches the ball out of the backfield and really has a knack for, you know, not going down, extending plays, things like that. But he's not Nick Chubb, and specifically he's not Kareem Hunt slicing through the Bengals after Nick Chubb has run at them 15, 18, 20 times, which is what we saw, Paul. So yeah. So the Browns played bully ball. You know, early in that game, they had wide open receivers. And I would say that Austin Hooper is a lot bigger part of the pass game than he was then. And we know that the Bengals struggled with Odell Beckham. So I do expect the Browns to move it. But yeah, I don't expect the Browns to come out and just make that statement and do whatever they want in the run game. If they do, then it will be, you know, not a game. But I would think the Bengals will be, you know, basically keying on the run and daring Baker Mayfield to beat them.
You know, in that first game, they basically used Chubb to set up Hunt. I don't think Hunt had a carry until midway through the third quarter. Is Johnson kind of in that same role, or is it more of a mix now, or was that game just an outlier where since that game, they've been more mixed in terms of who gets the spread of the carries?
Yeah, Jay. I mean, that was the rotation is Chubb was all the first half primary carries, Hunt mixed in a little bit, and then they would share kind of in the second half. Now it's mostly Hunt, and he is supremely talented compared to Johnson, but he has not been 100%. So they have had to mix that up. I think what they've done is they'll use the fullback a little bit, but they'll use a lot of two tight ends. They'll run Jarvis and Odell on end arounds, quick shovels, things like that. And really, you know, Kareem is best in the screen game and on the perimeter. So the answer is you will see both backs, and you will see Kareem Hunt, you know, in position to make a bunch of big plays, but I don't think you'll see him in the fourth quarter just ready to rip off 80 yarders. I'd still start him in fantasy though. That's for sure.
Yeah. Start all your Browns. There's an interesting X factor in this game that everyone knows, but I think, you know, maybe certainly for Browns fans that haven't been watching all the Bengals games as closely, Joe Burrow is getting much better. And he is, I will say, he's not the same guy, you know, that he was in Cleveland, nor should you have expected him to be, considering that was his second game and in a short week as he's still learning the NFL game. He's taken a big, you in some really, really important stats, in particular his efficiency stats and his intermediate game. He has taken some huge strides over, and you can see it every week. The numbers go up another yard per attempt in key categories, whether it's, you know, it's completed air yards or, you know, per attempt, or whether it's intermediate completion percentage, all this stuff. And now hitting the day, actually hit a deep ball, believe it or not. Their first since CJ Uzomah scored a touchdown in Cleveland, their first ball completed over 20 yards in the air since then with a deep connection to T. Higgins in Indianapolis. But Burrow, it's the only thing that's been missing of his game. I mean, he has really turned into a monster back there. Baltimore handed him his lunch, as they have handed many teams their lunch this year. But I rookie stinker against maybe the best defense in football, I don't really hold over his head. If you take that game out, every single week he's been more efficient. He's been more dynamic. He's been more confident as a playmaker. You know, I think, you know, this has a chance to be a game where he can kind of plant his flag in this series a little bit and kind of save this team that is in such a bad way after getting their butts kicked in Baltimore and blown a 21-point lead in Indianapolis, of a lot of questions being asked and a lot of hot seats being heated up.
Yeah.
For, you know, they don't forget the Bengals have the Steelers and Titans the next 2 weeks after this. So 1-7-1 is staring them in the face if they can't find a way to beat Cleveland. And I think you better believe everybody in the building knows it. If there's a trick that they have up their sleeve, it's probably coming out Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, this is two desperate teams, right? I mean, the Browns got thoroughly humiliated last week. And guys, this is going to sound bizarre coming off a 38-7 loss, but the Browns defense has played much better, specifically against the pass. It got gashed against the run last week, but Big Ben didn't even have 150 yards. You know, they just let James Conner do what they want. They gave points away on the pick six, and then eventually Chase Claypool made a couple of plays. But before that, you know, they beat the snot out of Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers handed the Browns the game, and the Browns took it. So, you know, Myles Garrett is a mega, mega star. He has hit that next gear. Denzel Ward at corner is a superstar. Everybody else is kind of in between. They've, you know, the defensive line has been pretty good. It was pretty absent last week, but you know, they will give the Bengals offensive line fits. Myles is the headliner. He's not the only one. So you have to attack them in the back seven where they're kind of rotating linebackers looking for answers. They've had to rotate DBs because of injuries and circumstances. If Burrow just doesn't throw it to Denzel Ward, and it looks like from the last couple of weeks that he and T. Higgins have really kind of taken off, there will be those chances there. And you're right, that's one thing that does stand out. You know, 61 completions and a lot of impressive plays in the first game, but Myles turned them over, and a lot of them were just 5-yarders, right? Going all the way down the field. So that will be a big deal, but the Browns defense has been better. So what was it, 35-30? I mean, I think – and this sounds a little like famous last words as I get ready to spit it out. I think it's more like 24-20, you know, kind of last possession game here. Maybe it turns into a shootout again, but I think both defenses step up comparatively. And, you know, and then both quarterbacks have to make a play to either, you know, stem the tide or maybe push it to a 2-score game in that second half and really put pressure on the other guy.
You know, I can't remember from the first game. Is Ward a guy that they traveled? Does he just stick with the other team's best receiver, or does he just stay on a side?
No, he mostly plays a side. Okay. He did end up on a lot of AJ Green in the first game. There are circumstances where he has, but he mostly plays a side, and Terrence Mitchell plays the other. The second rounder from last year, Greedy Williams, is on IR and has not played. They've stabilized the slot position where veteran Kevin Johnson has been in. He was not available for that first game, and the Bengals just feasted. So not that Tyler Boyd can't have another big game, but they've kind of upgraded there. And like I said, during the 4-game win streak, Myles either had a game-changing turnover or a game-changing play, at least one in all 4 of those games. He had the safety on Phillip Rivers. He had the strip sack on Burrow. He had a strip sack on Dak Prescott. They turned Washington over 5 times. That's how they've lived. The Browns are like, on offense, yes, we're a run team, but we're going to go with whatever we can find. And on defense, we're going to live off the turnovers. And during that streak, they created the turnovers. They cashed them in. Last week, they turned the ball over. They didn't have a chance. So, you know, as cliche as that is, I think that's what it really comes down to. You know, when you do force those mistakes, you have to cash them in. Last time they turned Burrow over, what, on the 2-yard line and walked in on the next play. Hmm.
Sounds to me like Bobby Hart's going to be trending on Twitter on Sunday.
Isn't he always
right? Like, I don't even know what Bobby Hart looks like, but I feel like I know him well.
Well, anytime Myles Garrett is lined up in front of him or Alex Redmond, or really any combination of Bengals offensive linemen that aren't Jonah Williams, I think we know exactly what's probably is.
And they've moved Myles around a lot more in this defense. And he told us, which I thought was interesting, that there are situations or packages, I guess, where he has the liberty to choose if he likes a matchup. He has played over the right tackle this year more than he has in the previous 2 years, but he has definitely logged snaps at both. They didn't have Olivier Vernon in the first game, who's not a great player, but he's a really strong, solid player. And since coming back a couple of games ago, he's made some plays. So both, yeah, you're right, Paul, basically what you said. Both tackles will be under pressure all day. And inside, they have Ogunjobi and Sheldon Richardson, both of whom are playing for money going forward. And, you know, those guys can be a load too.
In yet another consistent themes with Bengals games this year, going to come down to that offensive line finding a way to hold it together somehow to keep Joe Burrow upright. I believe in the first game, I went back and I tracked it. There, I made up my own stat for hits because there was technically 21 pressures in that game, but there was a lot of like, okay, he got rid of it, and then the guy maybe tapped him on the shoulder with a finger. But there were 5 ouches and five goddams on Burrow in that game, including the sack. They could probably use about half of both of those if they want to try to win. I think that's gonna
that's,
be,
that's great stat thing. Keeping, first of all.
Yeah, no, it is. It is totally subjective.
I think that launched a run of for Miles. I think he had at least seven or nine pressures over the next four games. And, you know, that's not a huge number, but like to do that consistently. And when you think about it, like that's a pretty wild number. And if he gets to that, if Miles is altering seven plays or nine plays, you know, it's going to be really tough for the Bengals.
There is no doubt. I look forward to the game on Sunday, as I always do, of the Battle of Ohio, as everyone does inside of this state. It's the most exciting game going. Most heated rivalry in sports. Step aside, Ohio State, Michigan. The boo is here. So, Zach, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. As always, Zach Jackson from Civilized Barking. Good to have you. And we'll talk to you when both these teams streak to the playoffs.
It's kind of like a playoff game.
It is.
Like you said, if the Bengals don't win, it goes downhill in the firing the coach talk quickly, which happens, you know, every other year here.
Yeah.
If the Browns don't win, then everybody presses the panic button. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's it. We'll be calling you back for advice on how you handle a team that considers firing a coach after 22 games.
It's been there, done that, fellas. Good talking with you.
All right, let's just take a quick break. Always great to hear from Zach about the lovely world of what's happening on in Cleveland. Although he's talking about desperation games. They're 4-2, Jay. Desperation. The Browns are 4-2. Celebration is what it should be. You're talking about playoffs. You've got stats on that, though, don't you?
I do. Those two losses are important in their future because they were both blowout losses to the Ravens and the Steelers. And I thought about that. I thought, well, how many times has a team lost multiple games by at least 31 points and still made the playoffs? And so since the NFL merger in 1970, it's only happened five times. Rarely do you get blown out like that multiple times in a season and still be good enough to rebound and make the playoffs. One of those teams was the 1970 Cowboys. They went on and went to the Super Bowl, but most of the other teams, those other four teams that overcame two 31-point losses, flamed out of the playoffs pretty quick. And most teams that do it don't even make the playoffs, and the Browns, as we know, don't often make the playoffs.
These are all facts. If the Bengals are going to win on Sunday, it's going to be about Joe Burrow. You had another really interesting stat that I'm curious to hear. This is another one of those where you have the answers and I don't know them. So Joe Burrow, if he goes over 300 on Sunday, will have done it five of seven games.
Yep.
So you looked up the history of any player at any point going for over 305 of the first seven games, right?
Yeah. We focused on what kind of rookie records he's been doing all along, but I wanted to look and see just any quarterback at any point in his career. How many times did he throw for at least 300 yards in five of his first seven games? And there's only been 14 quarterbacks to do it. Some of them have done it multiple times. Drew Brees has done it five times. But that Drew Brees is a good starting point on that list, because this list of 14 guys, it shows you the company that Joe Burrow is in or can be in with a 300-yard performance on Sunday, just the start to this career. That list, the names on this list, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, Kurt Warner, Philip Rivers, Aaron Rodgers, Dan Fouts, Joe Montana, Steve Young, and Tom Brady are either Hall of Famers or Hall of Fame locks. The other names on the list, Matt Ryan, who just did it last year, Patrick Mahomes, Andrew Luck, Drew Bledsoe, and Rich Gannon did it in their Super Bowl year in 2002. That's some pretty heady company.
That is some really heady company. Rich Gannon is the only name on there that makes you say, eh, and he went to the Super Bowl that year.
Right.
I mean, everybody else, there's a chance that almost all of those could end up in the Hall of Fame.
That is a hell of a list to join. Now, the league is different these days. You have more passing, you have more yardage. But that said, even that said, that's for a guy to do that in his first seven games, that's incredible company to join. Wow. You're just full of the big stats this week.
Well, what else am I going to write about the matchups for the boo?
That's true. We'll get into those here in a second. First, I want to go to Bengals Growler Bet. Shout out Bill Douglas, who hit the 78.3. Hit the 78.3 on us last week to win a growler of delicious 50 West beer. On us, of course. Very, very exciting to have all you people keep winning the beer that I have to buy for you. Okay? Great. It's about to get harder. Okay? Enough winners. If you can hit this, congratulations. I'm not up any antes. I'm not saying I'll give you double. We're not doing double growlers. We've been really nice with the growlers so far this year, but it's really starting to backfire on me. So here's what we got this week. Longest Browns run. It seems like that could be a tough number, right? It could be a tough number. Times Huber punts. So longest Browns run of the game. So Kareem Hunt for 37. Times number of times Kevin Huber punts. So 37 times 4 is your number if you, whatever that ends up being. I don't have the math in front of me. Whatever it is, that would be your final number would be. That combination. Longest Browns run times Huber punts. Jay, do you have one?
I do. I'm just going to go with a nice round number of 200. A longest run of 25 and 8 Huber punts.
If someone gets this, all right, 148 is my number. That's 37 times 4. That's what I'm going with. So we'll see if that happens. If someone wins, the rants are only going to get louder, people. Okay. Let's get into predictions for Sunday. Let's do a key and a prediction for you. What's your key? We talked a little bit about these with Zach, but we'll go ahead and go back in here.
Yeah, I mean, my key is Myles Garrett, and you know, Zach talked about how much he's lining up on the against the right tackle so much more this year. And we all know Bengals right tackle is Bobby Hart. That's not a good recipe. The Browns got to Burrow for 3 sacks, but hit him so many times in that first game. I just think that's going to be the issue here is we're going to see more sacks. The Bengals are going to struggle to move the ball. I don't think we're going to see a 35-30 high-scoring game this time. I think it's going to be much lower scoring, and Myles Garrett's going to do some damage.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to feel kind of similar to the last game. Not necessarily the Bengals are going to have to throw it 61 times. If they have to do that, that's the disaster. I mean, that's... They can't be playing from behind again. Of course, I don't know if we want to play from ahead at this point after what we saw last week. So, you know, what is best? I don't know, but it being in a situation where you have to drop back and throw it that many times is bad. You don't want Burrow up in the high 40s for attempts. You just don't want to have to do that. They're too good. They're going to get back there and get theirs. And you got to figure out whether it's chips and screens and running the ball more. Find ways to try to flip that a little bit. Find ways to try and stop the run. You know, we saw them do that a little bit in Baltimore. If they can lock into some of the stuff they did in Baltimore to slow down that Ravens rushing attack, you can see the recipe for slowing down the Browns and winning this game and letting Baker Mayfield throw you one or two, which he did last time. William Jackson with a pick of him last time and converting those and win. Jay, that 11-0 stat is just in my crawl.
Mine too.
11-0 after a 21-point first half lead is
lost. That stat is just it's having a hard time letting go of it. And a home game, you know, they've won some home games. They've beaten the Browns at home not that long ago. The William Jackson concussion makes me nervous. That could be a problem. We'll see what comes of that. I am reluctant to do this, but I think I might do this. It's hard to say. It's hard to say it out loud. But I'm going to go 12-0. Bengals win 24-23 over the Browns. No, 31-28.
Wow.
31-28. Bengals over Browns. I don't know what's wrong with me at this point. It's just a feeling. It's a feeling I have in the overreaction league and the 11-0 stat. Everything else that's gone on this week, home game, I'm going Bengals win 31-28. Final answer.
Yeah, the 11-0 is a big one for me, and then I've got one more stat for you here. Since 99, when the Browns came back into the league, they've had 65 chances to sweep a division opponent. They've done it four times. Now, some of those games, you know, you lose the first game and then it's out the window. But there have been 20 times that they won the first game against a division opponent and they pulled off a sweep only 4 out of 20 times. And that's a case here. They won the first game against the Bengals. I just like last year, I think the Bengals get the split. I think it's going to be much lower scoring than you do. I think it's going to be 17-16. I predicted this last week and it didn't work out that way, but I do think this is going to be a much more of a defensive slog. The Browns defense against that Bengals offensive line, I think, is going to keep the points down. And I just don't think Baker Mayfield is right. So that's where I'm going to go. I'm not going to call a Bullock field goal at the gun. I'm not that crazy, but I am going to say 17-16 Bengals.
The last two times the Bengals were swept by the Browns in a season, they fired their coach at the end of it. That was in 2002 and 2018.
Yes.
So must win. We talked about that at the top. Could be. All right. That wraps it up. Another delightful, uplifting edition. The podcast. I mean, has any podcast needed a win more just for morale of like tone? We try to have fun on here, and it's just the topics. It's hard. We have to talk about what's happening. We have to talk about what you are talking about. We have to talk about what you want to see or the questions you have. And it's just dark right now.
Oh, wait till next week if they lose this game.
Oh, I don't know. We shall see. But thanks to everybody that has stuck with us, that is listening. We love having you. We hope that you are a subscriber to The Athletic and catch all the coverage we have up there now. If you want to be a subscriber, theathletic.com/hearthatpodcastgrowl, and you can go there and click on any link. And you can subscribe. We have discount offers, free trials, all of those things available for you. So we hope you would join. If not, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. And we will talk to you on the walkout after the boo on Sunday at Paul Brown Stadium. Have a good one.